Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! The hour of 6 o'clock here on the East Coast. Full dark has fallen. We're expecting more in the way of brutal cold. And, you know, if we're lucky, we'll get some added sleet into the bargain by Friday. Ooh, glory. I can't hardly wait. Yeah, I can. Oh, but, you know, I sit around here and I work during the days, and there's a Jimmy Buffett song that comes to mind when it's brutally cold like this. And one of the lines is, I want to go where it's warm. Oh, why couldn't Canada have been south of us instead of north? Darn it. Oh, but anyway, I do. I sit here and I work and I do the things I do to get a show together. By the way, welcome to the Tuesday night program. I'm Bob. I forget to introduce myself sometimes because it's such a congenial little conversation we've been having for the last 5 years that I just assume that everybody here knows what's going on and who everybody is, but, you know, maybe not. For anyone new to the program, let me extend an invitation, by all means, to jump out there and get in the headonradionetwork.com chat room. It's easy, and it's free. Or it's easy for most folks. I did have a note from one person telling me that he was having a hard, well, he had no luck at all getting into the chat room because his his netbook or something was running on Linux. So I don't know. Is there a Linux Java issue? I'm not at all sure. But I sit around doing my thing to get a show together, and usually I've got a little music going in the background and stuff, and today I had Jimmy Buffett going singing, you know, I want to go where it's warm. But then the randomizer kicked in, and this happened.
To see it.
Let's see. Here we go. Recognize that? Well, that's all it took. That is literally all it took. And I just realized where my where it just happened inside my head. These things happen sometimes, and I hope you'll just bear with me for a minute. I promise I won't make it too painful. But in light of the weather, and in memoriam, I suppose, for our dead furnace. Yes, we just found that out because, well, we try not to turn the heat on until the last possible minute. And so we just found out that the old 25-year-old furnace has gone to its long furnace home, and we are heating the house here and the studio with a combination of propane space heaters and electric space heaters. It makes me, but I heard that came on, that song, and I know a million of you recognize it. That's off of Jackson Browne's Running on Empty album. And it was like a lightning bolt. Your nose is reddish. My toes are blue. There ain't no difference between the two. Propane might finally get us warm again. Heading down 60, turning up Maine. Looking for that guy who sells propane. Propane, it'll be heating our house again. Oh, mama, come here quick. That old propane's better than burning sticks. Propane Keeping hypothermia away. Late last night, about a quarter past four. Agnes poked me in the ribs on the way out the door. Where's the propane? I said, I hit it so we'll have heat again. I was talking to my doctor down at the hospital. He said, man, it says you're freezing, but that's impossible. Propane, you look like your temp's 45. Now I'm losing feeling in my fingers. I'm almost out of gas. Such a fine burn, but I knew it wouldn't last. Propane, guess it's time to run to Lowe's again. You don't want to live in my mind. You just don't. That's the kind of stuff that just goes randomly ripping through my brain, and the next thing you know, it's out through the fingers, into the keyboard, and done. But if you're lucky, that'll be the last time I sing tonight or, you know, for the next several days. We hope. So now that that's out of my system, I suppose we can go on with the rest of what our Tuesday might well turn into. I go every day over to places like Alternet and Crooks and Liars and Think Progress and a variety of other sites, and I get links from you guys to various and sundry stuff. But at Alternet today, I saw headline, Tax Bill Moves Ahead in Senate. Well, la-di-da. It turns out that on a procedural vote, 83 members of the Senate voted to go forward on the Great Compromise. And all I want to point out out of that little teensy tiny fact is that the myth of gridlock is exactly that. Gridlock is what happens when the Congress, and particularly the Senate, cannot find the common ground they need to come together. But they found it. Remember, the poorest member of the United States Senate is something on the order of $900,000 a year. Almost a millionaire. And when they were faced with a tax cut for them, staring them right in the little broken red corpuscular whites of their eyes, they had no problem whatsoever coming together to take care of their own. They vote themselves pay raises. Actually, they've got a mechanism built in, I do believe, where they don't even have to vote on it. It just happens, those pay raises, kind of like the tooth fairy. You put your tooth under the pillow, and the next morning, there's a million-dollar tax cut. And so it was that 83 senators voted to advance the bill to the next stage of the Senate's process. It won't be formally approved until tomorrow, but passage is a certainty. Because, among other things, 17 senators do not a filibuster make. And when this thing is on greased rails, ain't nothing slowing it down. There's still a little bit of a rebellion going on in the House, with members of the House of Representatives, Democrats, vowing to make the bill be what? A little less friendly in terms of the estate tax. But the Senate, it was lost on them the idea that these things were artificially conjoined and that they should be broken asunder and dealt with separately. Wasn't going to happen. Now, put that up against this headline. Bear in mind, they lickety-split, got that procedural vote done with 83 votes. This sucker is going to pass tomorrow. And you can take your filibuster hopes and hang them by the chimney with care. But you know what? St. Filibuster ain't going to be there. because 83 members of the Senate decided that they would take care of their own. It's not my tax cut. It's not your tax cut. To a certain extent, it's Paris Hilton's tax cut. It's Dick Cheney's tax cut. But in the Senate, they recognize that, by God, it is their tax cut. Their tax cut. And you know what? Shh. They want it. Posture, 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 posture. They want it. And I guarantee double T you that for all the times that Harry Reid has displayed no living sign of any sort of spine, that he has one that is running down past ribs made of solid granite rock, and his spine is as stern and as starched as cold blue steel when it comes to anybody getting in the way of his tax cut. Because we do recognize, don't we? And I'm not offering this as criticism of anyone or a condemnation of anyone. I'm offering this simply as fact for your consideration. No, I'm not Rod Serling. But it is a fact for your consideration that because the Making Work Pay tax credit will expire while the tax cuts for the rich don't, that if you are an individual making $20,000 a year or a family making less than $40,000, extending the Bush tax cuts for the rich ain't gonna do diddly for you. Your taxes, sunshine, your taxes, pretty little prole, are going up. January 1. They just are. Because with the expiration of that good tax credit that no one was willing to give Barack Obama credit for, remember, the vast seas of teabaggers, when asked, are your taxes too high? Well, they are. And that fascist, communist, Muslim Kenyan, he wants to make them higher. He gave you a tax cut? Did not, because he's a Kenyan. Kenyans don't give tax cuts. Well, that's going to expire. And it really did happen. And it's gone now. So the difference that made, as compared to the parsimoniously pissant tax cut for that tax bracket in this bill, is going to be winding up with a net negative for families earning less than $40,000 a year and individuals earning less than $20,000. That's part of what the Senate voted on. They want theirs, screw you. They've got theirs, screw you. If you were supposed to have a tax cut, you'd be a millionaire and you'd be in the Senate. Okay? Do you understand? Good. Don't know why that's so difficult. But anyway, it just raced through the Senate, 83-17, through a goose. Compare that with this headline. Senator Nelson skeptical Senate can ratify START treaty with Russia by year's end. Jordan Fabian is the article of the Hill's blog briefing room article headlined thusly. A centrist Democrat is casting doubt on the Senate's ability to ratify a long-stalled nuclear arms reduction treaty with Russia by year's end. Senator Ben Nelson, Dino, Nebraska, a supporter of the new Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty, believes that the Senate does not have enough time to take up the accord before the lame duck session concludes, since members of the upper chamber will want a full debate. Really? Because they'll want a full debate? What he means is that there aren't 60 votes there. There aren't 60 votes to get past, to get a path to pass a cloture motion and limit debate. But Ben Nelson doesn't have it in him to say that the Republican Party is going to put a dagger through this treaty that actually has real-world implications for the safety of you and me, our friends, our neighbors, our loved ones, our children, our grandchildren, the very idea of a future at all. If it can be accomplished yet this session, that would be worthwhile, Nelson told the Lincoln Journal Star. But I think there's not enough time to get that done. You know what? Yeah, there is. Because the old saw is true. Where there's a will, there's a way. There are millions of people, 99ers out there, whose Christmases aren't going to be squat. December 25th is just going to be another day on the calendar for them. Hanukkah has come and gone. There are members of those 99ers for whom Hanukkah was just another 8 days in the year. There are Muslim 99ers out there for whom Eid and Ramadan were just another month. Because they are all in the forgotten class of the unemployed. So I don't have much sympathy, especially in light of that through a goose 83-17 vote, when a guy who has spent the last 2 years helping to make the Senate the ineffectual, dysfunctional body that it is says, well, there's just not time. Yeah, there's time, Senator Nelson. For once in your life, think of something besides that dead animal sitting on top of your head and maybe vow to give up your Christmas and your New Year's Eve. And remember for once in your life what it was like to actually, honestly work your job. Because I see no evidence that he has done so any time in the recent past. Ben Nelson's excuse, well, the Russians are sophisticated people, and they'll understand the delay. Are you really willing to bet? Well, see, but it's Ben Nelson. And he knows that should the balloon go up, as Buck Turgidson, I believe, said in Dr. Strangelove, I'm not saying we wouldn't get our hair mussed. But you know what? There are plans in place to put Ben Nelson on a plane and fly him to a remote, undisclosed location under a mountain somewhere that's already outfitted with food and comfort and probably HDTVs and reruns of Leave It to Beaver and everything, you know, I don't know, the care and feeding of animals that live on top of your head. That's all there waiting for Ben Nelson. If there's one of those, Mr. President, we have a problem, kind of phone calls. You and me, not so much. So it's okay for Ben Nelson to talk about there not being any time. You see, it will take 67 votes to ratify the treaty. John Kyle of Arizona basically has said that he will do whatever is in his power to stop it. They've trotted out everyone from George H.W. Bush to an array of former secretaries of state down to the point where there was actually a photograph taken of President Not Sure sitting next to a known war criminal by the name of Henry Kissinger. Yeah, that was, I saw that photo, and that was fit to gag a buzzard. And speaking of Henry Kissinger, I got a link a couple of days ago, and I've been hanging on to it. I said I didn't want to do the story last night toward the end of the program because the time did not exist in which to do it justice. I got a link from an old friend of the program, introduced to us all by John Fox, a man by the name of Anthony Lowenstein, wrote a powerful book called My Israel Question, and he maintains a blog. There is if you're Henry Kissinger, you gotta wince a little bit every time you see the press release come out, new tapes released, new Nixon tapes released, report forthcoming. Because if you're Henry Kissinger, you just know that all of those years that you spent with your nose in Richard Nixon's rectum are going to come back and haunt you again. And the world is going to be reminded once again what an amoral piece of walking human feces that you actually are. So there it was, published on the 12th of December by Anthony Lowenstein at AnthonyLowenstein.com. Headline, oh, sit down. Or not, it's Henry. You know, we're used to it. Kissinger relaxed about Jews being put in gas chambers. No, really. The quote that Anthony pulls from the report, noting this new revelation can only do the man harm, the New York Times story. Quoting the story, Richard M. Nixon made disparaging remarks about Jews, blacks, Italian Americans, and Irish Americans in a series of extended conversations with top aides and his personal secretary, recorded in the Oval Office 16 months before he resigned as president. The remarks were contained in 265 hours of recordings captured by the secret taping system Nixon had installed in the White House and released this week by the Nixon Presidential Library and Museum. It continues. While previous recordings have detailed Nixon's animosity toward Jews, including those who served in his administration, like Henry Kissinger, his national security advisor, these tapes suggest an added layer of complexity to Nixon's feeling. Oh, this cannot be good. Whenever we're talking about layers of Nixon's complex feelings, oh, Henry, they just didn't understand me. By God, Teddy Roosevelt would have understood me. Wouldn't you, Teddy? Mr. President, I suggest you take another one of your seconals with a half a fifth of cheap gin. It always seemed to work before. He and his aides seemed to make a distinction between Israeli Jews, whom Nixon admired, and American Jews. And apparently then there's another layer of Jews for both Henry and Dick. Jews who are neither American nor Israeli. Again, quoting from the New York Times story, an indication of Nixon's complex relationship with Jews. Man, how do you write? Well, you'll see. After I'm done, you'll see. How do you write something like that? Ow. Hairball. An indication of Nixon's complex relationship with Jews came the afternoon Golda Meir, the Israeli prime minister, came to visit on March the 1st, 1973. The tapes capture Meir offering warm and effusive thanks to Nixon for the way he had treated her and Israel. But moments after she left, Nixon and Mr. Kissinger were brutally dismissive. I guess that's how you write it if you're the New York Times member. Brutally dismissive in response to requests that the United States press the Soviet Union to permit Jews to emigrate and escape persecution there. Just the setup alone sort of lets you know this is not going to work out well, doesn't it? Yeah. Well, here it comes. The emigration of Jews from the Soviet Union is not an objective of American foreign policy, Mr. Kissinger said. And if they put the Jews into gas chambers in the Soviet Union, it is not an American concern. Maybe a humanitarian concern. I know, Nixon responded. We can't blow up the world because of it. What was that? What was that real live, honest to Jesus journalism phrase? An indication of Nixon's complex relationship with Jews. What's complex about just hating them? My God, and there's Henry. You know, anytime somebody who's Jewish has done so much as delivered a cold cup of coffee to Alan Dershowitz, there's an entire cadre of people out there who will immediately leap onto that person and call him a self-hating Jew. In fact, when Antony Lowenstein published his book, My Israel Question, they practically tattooed it on the back of his neck, self-loathing Jew. But if ever on the planet there has been Henry Kissinger.
The emigration of Jews from the Soviet Union is not an objective of American foreign policy. And if they put the Jews into gas chambers in the Soviet Union, it is not an American concern. Maybe a humanitarian concern.
Have another Chesterfield, Henry.
I know, we can't blow up the world because of it.
Wouldn't it have been nice to have had a WikiLeaks back then? Wouldn't it have been nice to have had these transcripts out there to remind us constantly and every day what happens when the racists and the filthmongers and the bigots of the Republican Party get their hands on the levers of power? It was Hannah Arendt who coined the phrase, the banality of evil. You can almost hear the cigarettes being lighted, can't you?
The emigration of Jews from the Soviet Union is not an objective of American foreign policy. And if they put the Jews into gas chambers in the Soviet Union, it is not an American concern, maybe a humanitarian concern.
He would have been a real laugh riot in 1941, wouldn't he? Or 40, or 39.
The rape of Nanking is not an American concern. It is not an objective of American foreign policy. And if the Japanese put the Chinese into extermination camps in China, it's not an American concern. Maybe a humanitarian concern.
Or gas chambers in Auschwitz or Dachau or Bergen-Belsen. It's not an American concern. It's maybe a humanitarian concern. Maybe! Maybe! Not even sure about that.
Maybe a humanitarian concern.
Wasn't that just the prettiest picture of Henry sitting next to the President of the United States?
The lynching of black people in the South is not necessarily an American domestic policy concern, maybe a humanitarian concern.
How did Barack Obama sit next to that vile old war criminal without just having the little teeny tiny hairs on the back of his neck just stand on end and individually scream? To be next to such a monster?
The deaths of a few million Southeast Asians in Cambodia and Laos is not an American foreign policy objective. if they put Buddhists in gas ovens in Cambodia, it is not an American concern. Maybe a humanitarian concern.
Makes your head hurt a little bit, doesn't it? Yeah. Makes you head hurt my ass. It makes you yearn. It makes you ache for justice. And for me, justice in the hereafter is no justice. The only justice is justice meted out by humans in the name of tormented humans upon the tormenting humans, like Henry Kissinger. Because when he finally does go dirt nap, there will be no one whispering in his ear, "You're a monster, Henry, and that flapping sound you hear, those are the bat wings of demons that are getting ready to carry you away to the eternal lake of fire, which was prepared for the devil and his angels, but which will accommodate you just dandy." No. No, there won't be. There will be machines around him beeping and pinging and clacking and popping and humming. Someone will be holding his withered, old, blood-soaked hand and stroking his head with a damp cloth lest the fires of hell begin to consume the very hairs upon his head. And the obituary... Oh, God. He's another one of those human beings that prove the maxim that evil is a preservative. Die, Henry. Die. Please. And when you think about the tormented Soviet Jews who desperately yearned to get away, whether it be to the United States or Israel, Canada, anywhere, who were kept behind that iron curtain, dreaming of freedom and never tasting it, freedom such as it is. When you think of that, and you know that probably even as we speak, Henry somewhere is sitting down to a very, very nice dinner, and having people talk about him as though he were an upstanding member of the human race. It gags. It truly does gag. But that's Henry. And that was Dick. And that was a conversation 16 months before his resignation, so 38, almost 39 years ago? And it's taken this long to find that out. If ever there has been an argument in favor of Julian Assange and WikiLeaks, that's it. Because the American people deserved to know right then what the thuggish, misanthropic monsters who had held the reins of power did when they got those reins in their teeth. Indeed, indeed. It's 26 minutes before the hour. There is an abundance of catch-up work to do from Moran Monday. But we'll take a little break and come back. You know the phone number, right? 877 443 2366877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. And this is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
I don't like how the folks I love. Me and my former best friend had a big falling out. I caught him with my wife, so I punched him in the mouth. We just can't hang out anymore, but I still wish them love. Folks I love, my alcoholic buddies are fun to hang around. When we drink together, peace and joy abound. Sometimes they bring me one more shot when they know I had enough. I don't like half the folks I love. God knows they're all dear to me, but if the truth.
Release called Pimps and Preachers. That's Paul Thorne, another artist that I was turned on to by my head writer David in Tennessee. You know, that's kind of, well, I thought it had a nice little tie into what we were talking about, and then serendipitously I got an email from our blogger Texas Betsy, simply labeled Kissinger. My grandmother is rolling over in her grave over this. She was so proud of how a fellow Jew had risen to power in the U.S., something impossible in any other country where she had lived. And there were a lot of people who felt that way. But he was an oven stoker. He was an informant. Oh, what a sick bastard. Isn't it funny how a miserable excuse for a human being like Glenn Beck can do, what, three entire show-length segments smearing a man like George Soros? While overlooking the horrific crimes of Henry Kissinger. The man should be subjected to boos and catcalls and the throwing of rotten vegetables any time he stuck his head out in civilized, semi-polite society. But no. He's an elder statesman. Clayton writing in. Barack is different from Henry how? Iraq, Afghanistan, shall I go on? I know. Somehow, though, if you apply a sort of quantitative analysis to it, Henry still comes up on top. Or on bottom, depending on how you look at things. Chile, Argentina, Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos. And then just the banally little evil things like, say, well, like this. Like this.
And if they put Jews into gas chambers in the Soviet Union, it is not an American concern. Maybe a humanitarian concern.
And Nixon, standing there, you know, that pose with the hand under the elbow, maybe a cigarette, and his head with that sort of little shaky thing. I know, Henry, they don't understand. We can't blow up the world because of it. False equivalences. I'm not moved to think that Golda Meir had gone to the White House and asked President Nixon to blow up the world over the mistreatment of Soviet Jewry. She simply asked that the United States use its considerable negotiation power to do decently by people who were suffering by the second.
We can't blow up the world.
Richard Nixon wouldn't have blown up a cherry bomb over Soviet Jews, or any Jews. What must it have been like when you knew that you had a meeting with Nixon? Say you're Billy Graham. What's his wife's name? Ethel, Mayella, Ruth, whatever. I'm off to see the president and pray with him. Well, dear, do tell him we hate the Jews too, would you please? Oh, I will, darling, I will. For they have not accepted as their personal Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And sure enough, he's on the tape, too.
Billy, it's the Jews, I tell you, the Jews. Oh, I know, they killed Christ.
Really? Really? You kind of wish there'd been a WikiLeaks back then. They had to move hell and half of Texas to get the Pentagon Papers out, and it took some real heroism by people like Daniel Ellsberg and Mike Gravel, at risk of his own hide, reading the Pentagon Papers into the record of the United States Senate. Gone are the days, right? Yeah. Mercy. But, you know, bigotry lives with us. And maybe it's one of those Jesus things, you know, where the bigots ye have always with ye. I don't know. But it's less than inspiring when you see comments from people like the Commandant of the Marine Corps. He spoke with reporters this afternoon. He is on record as opposing the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And was at, his name is James Amos. Well, there's another word that rhymes with that that seems to be more appropriate, but applicable, but no. His name is General James Amos. And he said the following today. When your life hangs on a line, on the intuitive behavior of the young man who sits to your right and your left, you don't want anything distracting you. I don't want to lose any Marines to distraction. I don't want to have any Marines that I'm visiting at Bethesda with no legs. Mistakes and inattention or distractions cost Marines lives. That's the currency of this fight. Wow. Project much, General? Kind of hard to think that he doesn't. Sort of reminds me of something else. See if this isn't just about very nearly the same thing.
If you gave an order that Santiago wasn't to be touched, and your orders are always followed, then why would Santiago be in danger? Why would it be necessary to transfer him off the base?
Santiago was a substandard Marine. He was being transferred.
That's not what you said. You said he was being transferred because he was in grave danger.
That's correct.
You said he was in danger. I said grave danger. You said, is there any
other... I recall what I said.
I can have the court reporter read back to you.
I know what I said. I don't have to have it read back to me like I'm...
Why did two orders? Colonel?
Sometimes men take matters into their own hands.
No, sir, you made it clear just a moment ago that your men never take matters in their own hands. Your men follow orders or people die. So Santiago shouldn't have been in any danger at all, should he have, Colonel?
You snotty little bastard.
Your Honor, I'd like to ask for a recess.
I'd like an answer to the question, Judge.
The corporal will wait for an answer.
If Lieutenant Kendrick gave an order that Santiago wasn't to be touched, then why did he have to be transferred? Colonel? Lieutenant Kendrick ordered the code red, didn't he? Because that's what you told Lieutenant Kendrick to do.
Object!
And when it went bad, you cut these guys loose!
Your Honor, you have more inside a phony transport!
Your Honor, you doctored the logbook!
Damn, Captain!
You coerced the doctor!
Consider yourself in contempt!
Colonel Jessup, did you order the code red?
You don't have to answer that question.
I'll answer the question. You want answers?
I think I'm entitled to.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth! Son, we live in a world that has walls, and those walls have to be guarded by men with guns. Who's gonna do it? You? You, Lieutenant Weinberg? I have a greater responsibility than you can possibly fathom. You weep for Santiago, and you curse the Marines. You have that luxury. You have the luxury of not knowing what I know, that Santiago's death, while tragic, probably saved lives. And my existence, while grotesque and incomprehensible to you, saves lives. You don't want the truth because deep down in places you don't talk about as parties, you want me on that wall. You need me on that wall. We use words like honor, code, loyalty. We use these words as the backbone of a life spent defending something. You use them as a punchline. I have neither the time nor the inclination to explain myself to a man who rises and sleeps under the blanket of the very freedom that I provide and then questions the manner in which I provide it. I would rather you just said thank you and went on your way. Otherwise, I suggest you pick up a weapon and stand a post. Either way, I don't give a damn what you think you are entitled to.
Did you order the code red?
I did the job.
Did you order a code red?
You're goddamn right I did!
Kind of hard to avoid the comparison, isn't it? Indeed. When your life hangs on a line on the intuitive behavior of the young man who sits to your right and your left and you don't want anything distracting you. Damn, General, latency much? Distracting you? Are you under some impression, General, that a gay Marine will have to wear an armband with a pink triangle on it? I don't want to lose any Marines to distraction. I don't want to have any Marines that I'm visiting at Bethesda with no legs. General Fruit Loops, it's time to retire. Mistakes and inattention or distractions cost Marines lives. That's the currency of this fight. You can't handle the truth. So let's recap. Gay Marines distract other Marines. How? Now, I've never been in combat. I have had a couple of bullets whiz by my head. Not the same thing. I've never served in the military. I will not suggest to you that I know what the military life is. But some of these things are functions of human nature and not of any particular military, because if they were a function of the military, the Israelis, the most cold-blooded killing machine on planet Earth, the Israelis, wouldn't allow gay people in the IDF. But they do. And it doesn't seem to have affected unit cohesion or morale in the least. And that's despite being part of a country that has as ugly a homophobic streak as any homophobic streak that runs through this one. Intuitive behavior of the young man. Intuitive behavior? You mean like you shoot when you're getting shot at? What Stephen Crane referred to as seeing the elephant in the red badge of courage? Intuitive behavior. Dr. Freud, courtesy phone. Intuitive behavior? Anybody want to tell me what this intuitive behavior is about? Is he suggesting that the Marine Corps is so gall-danged butch that they that at the knowledge that a fellow Marine was gay, they would suddenly find that drop everything and start singing the soundtrack to Chorus Line? I think better of the Marines than that. Maybe I'm crazy for it. Intuitive behavior. I wish I had a better handle on what he means by that. Maybe this is like when Mahmoud I'm a hand job said, what did he say? Oh, yeah, gay people cause earthquakes. The gay rays, apparently, coming off of a gay Marine, according to James Amos, he was on Good Times, I think. James Amos seems to think that the gay rays coming off of the gay marine are so profound and so disruptive. God, they're like a Klingon disruptor rifle, aren't they? Just done. They're so disruptive. The mere presence of a marine who marches and salutes and stands his post, just like Colonel Jessup said, but that he exudes these gay rays that make straight Marines forget to shoot when they're getting shot at. That is some profound power. It's moments like this that I would just give about a farm to hear from our dear friend Peter Godbold. It was stuff like this that drove him absolutely crazy over the course of the groundbreaking program that he hosted, Strictly Confidential, here on the Horn for over a year and a half. What ugly bigotry. There's only one problem. In the survey that the Pentagon did of the armed forces, it is true that 47.2% of Marines surveyed said a repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell would have a negative impact, and they were more likely to say their morale would be negatively affected by a repeal than other service members. True. Still, 92% of service members generally said they were okay with working with their gay comrades. And here's the thing that General James Amos didn't bring up when he said that he remarked that Marines in Afghanistan had sent a very strong message in the recent study by their opposition to repealing the ban, to repealing the bigotry, to repealing the prejudice. He said it was a very strong message, and he said, I have to listen to that. Apparently, however, he's not listening to the 92% or the 84%. 84% of Marines in combat arms units who said they don't have a problem. Intuitive. Mistakes and inattention or distractions. Honest to Jesus, you know, there's a famous saying out there that there are no atheists in foxholes. Well, I've met a few who have had contact with people who have assured me that, yes, there by God are plenty of atheists in foxholes. Because by the time you get to the foxhole part, the idea of a loving and merciful God is pretty well out the window, else you wouldn't be in said foxhole. But if that thing is going to be prated further, that there are no atheists in foxholes, I don't think that there's a lot of foxhole sexuality, if you will pardon the term. For the life of me, I cannot fathom the notion that in the midst of a firefight with crap blowing up all around you and you trying to blow up crap all around somebody else, that there's going to even be one scintilla euris of time in which to contemplate who your buddy loves, how your buddy loves, why your buddy loves, when, if. It simply isn't part of the calculus. It can't be. And if, in fact, the problem is as profound as General James Amos suggests, then we have graver problems inside the armed services than Don't Ask, Don't Tell even begins to address. Wouldn't you say? Meanwhile, this little postscript to the whole story. White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs, upon being informed of General Amos's remarks, refused to condemn them or even criticize them. Damn, damn, damn. How are you ever going to cast out the demon if you can't even criticize the devil? So that's the first hour of the program, and you guys are surprisingly silent. But chime right in if you want to, or I can filibobster for the next 2 hours. You know what that's like. Don't make me pull this radio show over. Because I will! You know the number, 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Hey, if you've never called the program before, this would be a lovely time to try it out. Because after all, we have a long list of survivors.
Right.
So fire them up. On its way, the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. I look forward to it every Tuesday and Thursday. We'll be right back. This is the horn.
Lay's boys do cabaret. Lay's boys are glad to be gay. They're not afraid now. A disco bar in Germany. Lay's boys are glad to be a pumperate now. Leather straps, Lay's boys got SS caps, but they got no gun now. Get dressed up, get a little risque, got to a little S&M these days. It's all in fun now. Lay's boys come on again for the high class boys and the businessmen. Driving a Mercedes Benz to a disco bar in a one chandelier. Well now, you get the jokes that the DJ makes. You get the nervous and you make mistakes. They're back for business. Some tourists take a photograph.
These boys
to cabaret. These boys are glad to be gay. These boys do cabaret. These boys do cabaret.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, December 14, 2010.
Midwest blizzard threatens Florida's crops. Visit sunny, glowing Chernobyl. November 2010, the hottest ever. Plus, a new and improved climate agreement. Now with more U.S. and China.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
Which takes me to global warming. West Palm Beach set an overnight low record, all-time low of 32 degrees. Now, for all the hangers-on on global warming, we know the whole thing was from the get-go a fraud, but if you're going to tell people they got global warming, it better start getting hot. And if it doesn't get hotter, and if it starts getting demonstrably record-breaking colder, they have a problem.
Well, looks like you have a problem, Rush, because 2010, so far, is the hottest year on record.
It's all hoax, because it isn't getting warmer.
Yes, it is. And that's true no matter how many times you say that it's not. This is your Green News Report. Today's Green News Report is sponsored by the Grace Institute for Democracy and Election Integrity, announcing their first ever award ceremony for election officials who have made an outstanding contribution to election integrity and transparency. Celebrate the move towards more open and honest elections by coming to the ceremony if you're in the San Rafael, California area on Thursday, December 16th. To learn more or to learn how you can help bring more transparent elections to your state or county, please stop by democracyandelectionintegrity.org today. That's democracyandelectionintegrity.org. Okay, Des, well, you heard Rush Limbaugh there in the opening lying and lying and lying on our public airwaves about whether it is getting warmer or not. And he used his own home out there in West Palm Beach because it was cold last night to prove there is no global warming. Never mind the fact that out here in Los Angeles over the last 3 days, it has been 85 degrees in the middle of December. A month or so ago, it reached an all-time record high in Los Angeles of 113 degrees. I guess if we're going to go by local records, it is warming and Rush is wrong. It's not cooling.
Rush is wrong.
He's not only wrong, he is lying over our public airwaves because the science, the statistics, and I know you got one of them today, shows us over and over again the globe is warming, whether Rush likes it or not.
Yes, we'll get on to the science in just a moment. First, though, I just wanted to cover this. This is too funny. Are you bored with the usual travel destinations like beaches or skiing? Hey, now you can try Chernobyl. Yeah, the notorious nuclear power plant in Russia that famously exploded back in 1986, killing thousands of people and forcing the evacuation of nearly 500,000, is apparently now going to become a tourist destination, according to the Guardian newspaper. The Ukrainian government says it will begin offering guided tours of Chernobyl. Chernobyl next year, hoping to capitalize on post-apocalyptic tourism or what the world would look like decades after people have to suddenly leave. But they, of course, say they will avoid the areas that are still radioactive.
So that's what's behind Barack Obama's initiative for new nuclear power in the U.S. It's just a gambit for new tourism. Brilliant. What could possibly go wrong?
Snowpocalypse in the Midwest, that massive Midwest blizzard that caused the roof of a Minnesota NFL stadium to collapse and is linked to 16 deaths so far, has now moved on to the eastern seaboard where plummeting temperatures, as Rush said, are now threatening to decimate crops in Florida. Florida growers are resorting to the very expensive tactic of using helicopters hovering over their crops to push warm air down into the fields. The cold weather may make it hard for some people, obviously including Rush, to grasp the announcement from both NASA and NOAA this last week that November 2010 was the hottest November ever on record since record keeping began in the early 1800s.
Yeah, but it was cold in Rush's backyard last night.
Yeah, those crazy scientists at NASA also announced last week that January to November 2010 is the hottest January to November on record. And climate scientists, by the way, predicted years ago that a warmer climate would lead to more extreme and intense weather events, and 2010 is certainly one for the record books. Everything from Russia's heat wave to Pakistan's floods to high temperature records being broken the world over.
You said Russia as in the former Soviet Union's heat wave, not Russia's as in Rush Limbaugh's heat wave, right?
Good point.
Okay.
That's the sound of a standing ovation from delegates at the UN Climate Summit in Cancun after finally reaching an agreement on major components of a climate change deal. It's a modest deal, but a deal nonetheless. Unlike last year's failed summit in Copenhagen, this year's climate summit in Cancun ended in the wee hours with a signed agreement where delegates from 193 nations agreed on a number of fronts, and for the first time, the agreement includes both China and the U.S. While the nations again did not reach a legally binding treaty to reduce emissions, overall, the Cancun Agreement made significant progress in areas such as funding to help poor nations adapt, technology sharing, reducing deforestation, and also includes a system for the first time for measuring, reporting, and verifying benchmark goals.
Uh-oh, 193 nations agreeing. Rush is going to have to up his lying quotient. For more on that and the stories we did not get to today, please check out our website where we tell the truth at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
It's all hoax.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
And a quick jaunt over to the mailbag. Just for a couple of different things. Let's see. I love emails like this. I love a subject line that says new listener here. Michael wrote in. He said, I've been listening to your podcast for about a month now. I was drawn to your show for a number of reasons, and probably the primary one has to do with my revulsion at mountaintop removal coal mining. I grew up in upstate New York and now live in Erie, PA. However, my wife is from Parkersburg, West Virginia, and has family all over your beautiful state, or, well, once beautiful, but thanks, Michael, including Buchanan, Weston, and Anstead. which I believe is down your neck of the woods. That's town where I come from. I've seen the silo and the dam behind Marsh Fork Elementary myself and have talked to people from the area and heard firsthand about the impact that companies like Massey and Arch are having. So, obviously, when I first heard your show, I was hooked. Anyway, I'm writing you about something my wife read me from Time Magazine last night. You may have already covered this last podcast I heard was from 1210. But Don Blankenship is resigning from Massey Energy, and that he is at the end of this year. This part I didn't know. Oh, yeah, this one sent me running around the room. Michael says his next gig will be consulting with a health insurance firm.
What, Edith? Huh?
His next gig will be consulting with a health insurance firm. Not sure of details, but the transition from head of a corrupt, dangerous coal mining firm to working with a health insurance company left me strangely, maybe cynically, not surprised in the least. The bottom line is still the bottom line. Don Blankenship will do anything to maximize profits for Don Blankenship, and who cares how many bodies he leaves in the ground to do it. Says Mike, keep up the good work. I hope to call in live someday, but mostly I just get to hear the podcast. I hope you get to, too, Mike. And thanks for that. I didn't know he was... Don Blankenship going to work for the health insurance industry is a little bit like, oh, I don't know, Count Dracula going to work for the Red Cross? Maybe? Does that work? I don't know. But it's not at all surprising because for a while there, Don was magnanimously patting himself on the back for having opened up a company store medical clinic down in, I think it's Madison, West Virginia, in Boone County. Oh, he was mighty proud of that. He had him a company doctor, and if you wanted to go, if you were sick and you wanted to go, you went to the company doctor. And they, and what they did, this is the fun part, they called that something new. When in actuality, it was retrograde motion to the tune of about 100 years. As David in Tennessee notes, cost cutting is cost cutting. Yeah, or worse yet, kind of like Dick Cheney being vice president. Oops. God. Will no one rid us of this meddlesome hillbilly? Whew. I just wonder which healthcare company he's going to work for, because that company is doomed. Who would hire him? Really, Mr. Personality? This is the face? Oh, Jeebus. Rolling in. This email via Facebook from Danny. He says, I have just two things to tell you, brother. Your show is very good. I've been listening for about a year now, and it's steadily gotten better. Keep it going. And then we have a new addition to the Sandra fan club. You've probably heard this before, but your conversations with Sandra are some of the best on radio. All of your callers are well-informed and interesting, but your dialogue with Sandra sounds like two next-door neighbors chatting over a cup of coffee instead of two people conversing on opposite coasts. You two should do a Christmas special. Keep going, says Danny. Thanks, Danny. Christmas special. I don't know, maybe singing a duet like Bing Crosby and David Bowie, or maybe that whole Andy Williams thing, and we can bring out all the little Osmonds or something. Kate loved the Paul Thorne song, I Don't Like Everyone I Love. And she adds, I wonder what the Marines think of the all-female platoon in Afghanistan. They're doing social and medical work where the women, with the women, apparently with some success. That poor general, he must be so claustrophobic in his closet. And this is not the, right. None of the queer soldiers I know wear red spikes with their camis, and none of the dykes I know in uniform are diesel. Well, maybe they ride Harleys at home, and they might have chainsaws in their tricked-out pickups. This homophobia is simply another issue to keep the society stirred up, a non-issue. Maybe to keep our minds off the fact that we don't belong in Iraq and Afghanistan, that we lost the battle before we even went in. Me, I'm about to cause another earthquake here in Montana if this conversation gets any more absurd. You have the power, Kate. Oh, the force is strong with that one. But no, that was not the only. Roland wrote in and said, I suspect the Marine general was thinking of gay Marines being distracted by all the beefcake around them. Like you, I doubt that would be a problem when the bullets are flying. And see, Roland, because that's just another backhanded slur. You know, gay people cannot control their sexual urges. And there she was, a rutting on my mailer. Jesus, criminy. And then there's Sandra. General Anus probably fears Reed welcomes penetration. He certainly did. He was oozing a little bit of latency there, wasn't he? Well, let's enough shilly-shallying. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, good evening. How you doing?
Hey, Jim.
I've got two questions for you.
Okay.
You remember what the Roosevelt policy toward Jews was back in the late 30s?
Don't let them in.
40s. And remember that ship that had 900 of them on board, and they were left in Havana Harbor and then sent back to Europe to await what would be almost a certain death? I think finally 300 of them ended up in the death camps.
Yes. To America's profound shame.
Yes, exactly. That was under FDR. And as far as DADT is concerned, under whose administration did that come into play?
Bill Clinton's.
Exactly. And what could he have done? He could have stopped it right then and there. But no, he didn't have the guts.
His initial inclination was to try to, but he was stopped by a Georgia conservative Democrat who was lauded as having profound military wisdom by the name of Sam Nunn. And now even Sam Nunn has said that he regrets the pressure that he brought to bear on Clinton.
Well, nonetheless, Sam Nunn did it. But worse than that, as a commander-in-chief and the president of the United States, Bill Clinton gave in to him. And that was one of the worst mistakes that ever happened. That could have been stopped a long time ago, just like perhaps the policy toward the Jews under FDR. You know, the admission of Jews under FDR and in that period of time, it was pretty hard. And that's one of the reasons the Nazis changed their policy from immigration to elimination. I'll cite one particular case when one Jewish person did get in, besides Einstein, and that was Otto Preminger. You know how he got in?
No.
Tallulah Bankhead. Her father was Speaker of the House.
For whom the Bankhead National Forest in Alabama is aptly named.
Whatever. Wonderful actress. But nonetheless, Will Bankhead, due to his daughter's influence, got Otto Preminger into this country. So this anti-Semitism business goes back a long way. And so does the anti-gay thing. And it goes back, and I pin it right on the shoulders of Bill Clinton, not having the guts and the balls enough to be the president that he was, and to have kept his promises made during the campaign.
And see, that for me, that makes it all the more egregious, Jim. It's not like they are suffering from a dearth of historical precedent. You know, the Voyage of the Damned, the MS St. Louis.
Exactly.
It was a Voyage of the Damned. And we have that historical precedent upon which we may look back. And even so, with that fresher then in minds than it even is now because of the mere passage of time, and yet somehow still, that vicious old warmongering war criminal Henry Kissinger can say, it doesn't matter if they gas Jews in ovens in the Soviet Union, it's none of our business?
Well, that's basically what was said in America before World War II.
I understand, and that's precisely my point, Jim.
Well, that's my point, too.
Are we incapable of learning?
Start with this. Go back to where it started. And the attitude toward the Jews back then. And what Bill Clinton should have done when he became president.
And again, I would suggest if there's anything to fault Barack Obama over, it is that, and this is a frequently repeated refrain, sadly, and that is that he doesn't, he doesn't president like others have presidented. He hasn't clearly defined a legislative agenda and driven it like a borrowed mule. Don't ask, don't tell should have been done away with long before it ever even became part of the electoral ping pong battle that's taken place for the last 4 to 5 months.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say. Clinton was commander in chief. He could have, by executive order, ended the whole thing. But he didn't have the balls to, enough to do it. And FDR didn't have enough compassion for Jews and people like that to be more permissive in the immigration policy. And that's exactly what you see what happened there. So you can't blame it on Kissinger. And you can't blame a lot of things on other people. It started back a long, long time ago. And people should be reminded of this, where it really comes from.
Jim, do I understand that you're offering an apologia for Kissinger?
I'm not blaming it on Henry Kissinger. I say Henry Kissinger probably, he had a lot of things to follow.
Well, he had a rampant anti-Semite for a boss in Nixon.
Well,
but he stood there, a Jew himself, echoing those sentiments. I can't get that through my head. But that's the dung on top of the ice cream sundae for Henry Kissinger, because there's the blood of Laos and Cambodia, there's the stuff in Chile. You know, it's seemingly endless.
Well, since when has our policy toward making these very egregious mistakes? You know, this isn't new. I mean, we have often, more often than not, supported these right-wing fascist dictatorships that have no regard for human rights whatsoever, because it has been in our best interest at that particular time to do so. That's the history of this country as far as its attitude toward human rights, human rights, human rights. That's just my point tonight, you know, historically. Agree or disagree, I make no defense for Mr. Kissinger, nor do I condemn him. I don't condemn anybody, because it has its roots long, long, long back in the past.
But, Jim, if we don't condemn somebody somewhere, doesn't that just mean that the roots will continue to grow longer and deeper over the course of the decades and the centuries?
Unfortunately, in the course of human history, all these negative things which you speak have a habit of just doing exactly that. I mean, these people get this stuff from somewhere back in history, and they seem to continue to follow it. That's just my point. I mean, when you have something as deeply rooted as anti-Semitism as it was, and it is because it was, and of course the DADT policy, and the free reign the Pentagon has been given to conduct all these studies, which have indicated that it is a flawed policy, but you have the people at the top to report directly to the president, not following an order that should have been given to end it. And that's where I lay the blame. As much as I love FDR, FDR made some serious mistakes back in reference to his policy toward the Jews. And I'm not sure exactly how sympathetic he was to Jews in any respect, as far as the immigration policy is concerned.
Well, I think that there's historical precedent there to suggest that FDR was deeply flawed in that regard.
Yes, he was deeply flawed, and you know, that's just the point I'm saying. FDR was a person who was very progressive in many ways, but then again, he had his own prejudices, and he was a man you didn't cross either. Because once you ever crossed him,
it was over.
There was no coming back from that. I mean, look at Joe Kennedy. Boy, he took care of him.
Well, but by the same token that we say that he was deeply flawed, I think we do ourselves a disservice, Jim, if we do not also say America was deeply flawed in that regard. Remember, Henry Ford published, what was the name of that paper? I can't remember, the Dearborn something.
I love Henry Ford. Number one, they used to have pictures of him in their bookshops, and because Hitler admired him so, because, number one, Henry Ford did not like Jews. Number two, he was a non-drinker and a non-smoker. And that was one of the things that endeared Henry Ford to the Fuhrer.
Strange bedfellows indeed. But it was a flawed country. And the whole, the whole point of it is, though, Jim, what I think I'm getting at is that we can either say, well, it's going to happen again and again and again, or we can work actively to stop it, to pluck it, to kill it before it grows. You know, in Wisconsin, and I'd been meaning to bring this story up, in Wisconsin, Abbotsford, Wisconsin, a Wisconsin businessman named Mark Pryor has posted a No Negroes Allowed sign on his business. The business is a strip joint, as if that makes any particular difference. But, yeah, he posted a sign saying No Negroes Allowed. And he says that's his right under the Constitution. I'm going to stick to my guns because I think I have the right as a business owner to reject service to anyone. It's not all the black people. There are just a few bad ones.
I mean, haven't you ever seen these signs? We reserve the right to refuse service to anyone?
Yes, I have. I have never seen one that says no Negroes allowed. But that is where we are in 2010. Thanks, among other things, to the resurgence of the teabaggers, who now talk, who have Klansmen and Patriot Movement and Militia Movement members who now talk openly about the things that only a few short years ago they could talk about behind closed doors.
But, you know, look at these, for example, these anti-Nazi, these Nazi groups and these people, I'm not sure what they call themselves now. I've heard so many names that are being given to neo-Nazi and neo-fascist things, and I've seen documentaries about the resurgence of fascism and Nazism in this country for the past 30 years. I mean, it just didn't start with George Lincoln Rockwell. I mean, you know, he started that stuff right after World War II. And finally wound up being shot in a parking lot because of a disgruntled fellow pro-Nazi. So these things have not gone away, not at all.
And all the more reason to shine a light on them when they do pop up and try to destroy them as quickly as possible.
Trouble is, Mr. Kincaid, is this. These things will I don't think you're going to ever eliminate them. You're not going to eliminate discrimination against people because of their religion, their nationality, their sexual orientation, or whatever. They may do so and give it lip service, but deep down, it's still there, and it's alive and well, and it's growing. And to tell you the truth, I don't see where there's a great deal that one can do to stop it in light of current political, economic, and military situations. I just don't see it coming.
But the question, Jim, is if it is inherent to our nature, do we just say, well, that's the way it is, and we don't battle it?
Unfortunately, that is the attitude of a great many people. And unfortunately, some of those people hold very powerful positions in our government and in our society, and as well as in our churches and things of that nature.
You know, I had an event similar, but not on any grand scope. And maybe it just shows the difference between me and maybe complacent America or whatever, Jim. But I was sitting in a restaurant watching a football game last weekend, or maybe the weekend. No, it was last weekend. No, weekend before last. And the place wasn't very busy. And this guy's chuckling, and he reaches over to me and he says, "Look at this big buck. Look at this big buck my buddy got during deer season." And he points his phone toward me, and it's a picture of, like, Snoop Dogg with a bunch of spikes photoshopped onto his head as if they were deer antlers. And I just looked at him, and I said, do you think you're laughing? Do you think that's funny? And he said, "Well, yeah, don't you?" I said, "No, I think that's sick." And I think there's something wrong with anybody who thinks it's funny.
Yeah, I do too.
And he looked at me and said, "Well, you know, some people are just so PC.
PC mean politically correct?
Yes. That's the code word right-wingers use when we try to tell them that they can't say nigger in public anymore.
No, well, Bob, they say all kinds of stuff.
Right.
They say all kinds of stuff besides nigger. They say dago.
They say it all. They really, but the thing is, they have been emboldened to say more of it because of the fear that the teabaggers instilled in a lot of people. Because remember, they carried their guns because they got a God-given right to carry them, and they're going to take their country back.
But I think, Bob, this came along. Stuff has been going on long before the teabaggers, the use of these.
Well,
things.
Certainly it has, Jim, but it has ramped up. The teabaggers have given legitimacy to that which had been largely delegitimized in this culture.
I don't really think it's ever been delegitimized. I really don't think so. That's my point, Bob. You may think so, but I don't think so. I disagree with you. It's never been delegitimized.
Well, I know that when I was a kid, and we're talking about Alabama.
Yeah, I'm familiar with Alabama.
When I was a kid and growing up, you would not have heard that word in the schools that I went to, because it would have caused immediate problems. And as a consequence, it was said behind closed doors, or if it was said, it was said among people of like mind. Yeah, the word is still in coin, but the public usage of the words and the metaphors and so forth has definitely ramped up with the advent of the teabaggers.
Well, yeah, perhaps, but nonetheless, not only the word, but the spirit is very much alive, and I really can't see where a whole lot has been done to do anything about that, really, to get at its roots.
Well, the problem is that whatever was done is in the process of being undone.
Well, whatever, but like I say, it's a generational thing that's being passed and passed, and that's where these kids and people get it, and these kids become adults, and they pass it on to their own kids. And that's just the way it is. And I don't see it ever going away. I really don't. I mean, like I say, you've got all these words that are used, like dago, spick, wop, cracker, nigger, and all that stuff. It's just as alive now as it was in 1930.
Now, see, that's where we do disagree, because I believe it was driven, especially through the civil rights movement, a lot of it was driven underground.
Well, that's what I mean. Being underground doesn't mean being underground as in buried. It's just being, it's in a state of dormancy. Or the word faggot. I mean, that doesn't, you know, I don't like any of those words. And I don't like any of the people who use them. But I'm just looking at the situation realistically. Being driven underground is not being killed. It's just been placed in a dormant state. And perhaps the dormancy has come to life because of the teabaggers and the people who've been behind them. It's a very sad commentary on the history of our country. I don't know what word they used to refer to the Indians as. I'm sure they had one for them, too.
Oh, redskin? Savage?
Well, probably something more derogatory.
I remember reading somewhere that in the early days of the Spanish conquest of Mexico, there was a saying that went around among the elite Castilian white class of Spaniards who had gone there, who said the Indians hear only through their buttocks. In other words, the only way you could coerce labor out of a former Mexica was to beat them. And sure, that's rife all over. But again, I don't know. Maybe you and I have a different approach. I believe in struggling against it. I believe in not being tolerant of it. And I believe in driving it underground again. I understand the mathematics of dividing fractions by two, certainly. But we can't eliminate it. Okay, we can't eliminate it. But then let's work on cutting them by 25% every year. And eventually we'll cut that fraction so much it will become all the more rare. It's a fight. It's a fight we have to fight, Jim.
By what mechanism?
By little things like what I did sitting in that restaurant. By not tolerating it when they try to bring it out in public.
But do you think that your reply to that man changed his views? No, I doubt it.
No, but he'll think twice before he assumes that somebody is as much of a racist as he is and goes prating it in public.
Well, that may be true.
I can't change his heart, and I can't necessarily change his mind, but I can do something, Jim, in the way of changing his public behavior.
Well, you know, I can't change the attitude of Fred Phelps and people like that and of why they were at Elizabeth Edwards' funeral.
No, but in the pouring down rain, 300 people showed up to drown out five.
Well, thank God for that. But nonetheless, these things, I just don't think they'll ever go away. I really don't. And as you've admitted, because of whatever movements, whatever, you can call them anything you want to, there has been a resurgence. And prejudices and discrimination and things like that, I don't know where they come from, and they are intuitive to certain people, I guess.
Well, they are born in fear.
Well, that's what I mean. It's a generational thing, and it's hard to erase stuff.
Right, and it's and beyond being generational, Jim, it's stuff that lives in the human part of the human mind that we refer to as the lizard brain. It's not part of the higher cognition of the human species.
But unfortunately, Bob, the higher part of the human cognition of the human species has a habit of not getting its way. Is that not so?
On occasion, you are correct.
On many occasions, on most occasions, stupidity has a habit of getting its way. I mean, why do you think every 20 years we have to fight another war and pick ourselves up off the floor and then 20 years later, if not sooner, start others with the same results?
And yet, oddly enough, in all of these contexts, Jim, we are talking about the American experience. There was an interesting segment on 60 Minutes Sunday night about Brazil. With the exception of limited participation in the Second World War, they're not a warring nation. They don't have a war every 20 years. There are other countries of the same stripe.
Well, look at their geographical position. And they have had a number of problems in Brazil.
Oh gosh, I didn't say they haven't had problems. I said they're not a warring people.
Well, no, they haven't had the means to mobilize and go to war.
Nor much in the way of impetus so to do.
Well, they just haven't had the means to get involved in things like that. You know, war is a very strong galvanizing principle among any society. It is the strongest, if not the strongest, one principle to pull the society together.
You know, the Swiss, granted they were complicit in ways that we didn't even know during the Second World War with the depredations of the Holocaust, but the Swiss have managed to stay out of a war for how long? And they're not exactly poor.
Well, basically that was for the convenience of the warring powers. Because, I mean, number one, Switzerland would be such a hard country to invest, it wouldn't be worth the trouble. I mean, the German General Staff made a study of it. And they said, no, it would not. And Switzerland being in the geographical makeup that it is, the Swiss were were highly prepared to give the Germans one hell of a fight, and it was decided they'd best just leave it alone. Because there it was, sandwiched right between two of the major fascist countries of Italy, Hitler's Germany and Mussolini's Italy.
And there was a historical perspective of which the Germans were aware that if you did, down through the centuries, if you had a hankering to go to war in Switzerland, the Swiss would be very happy to hand you your ass.
That's what I'm saying. They were very well prepared, and they were very well organized, and they developed a number of underground defenses and things like that, which, according to the staff made by the German generals, said, we don't need to be there. And besides, what would Switzerland have to offer them anyway? You know, other than a place where they could all go to when the situation got rough if they lost because of its neutrality and because of its monetary value and the place where funds could be kept safe as a neutral country.
And there I think you identify something very important, and that is, even if it's something like the calculations of the Third Reich, the willingness to engage history actually means something. And that is something that tells on us generation after generation after generation. We as a people don't give a damn about our history, Jim, and we most assuredly don't want to learn from it. And now that, and now in this era, when you've got the likes of a Glenn Beck out there for an hour every night and 3 hours on the radio, completely rewriting American history, what chance does the populace have except to blithely and blandly and blindly repeat its own mistakes?
Well, they're rewriting history in other ways, too, in textbooks, things of that nature, and conveniently dropping out this and adding this and glossing over that. And unfortunately, our history is just filled with a lot of ugly, ugly, ugly things. I mean, for example, and I'm going to get off here after I say this. Why do you think American Indians won't carry a $20 bill in their wallets?
Because Andrew Jackson's picture's on it.
Yeah, the Great White Father. And he used Indians at the Battle of New Orleans. They were one of the, as well as Jean Lafitte and other people as well. He used Indians to fight Pakenham or whoever that British general was who was fighting against him. And yet he broke every treaty he ever made with them and sent them packing out of North Carolina on the Trail of Tears to Oklahoma. So there it is. I mean, you know, we got a lot to answer for, my friend. As a country and as a people.
And, you know, it may be that there is so much of that original blood that is why we are answering in the fashion we are, Jim.
Well,
if you buy into notions of karma or generational retribution.
Well, it says in the Bible itself, the sins of the fathers being visited on those of the children. I don't know, Bob. I don't know.
I know. Jim, have a good night.
Love it going away.
All right. You take care.
Yeah.
Bye now. You know, when you think about places like Switzerland, it's hard not to think again of a place like Afghanistan, where land conflicts are concerned. You know, you look at them on the map, you look at the geography, and one thing comes to mind if you've got any sense in your head whatsoever. Don't go there. You don't want to be there. It ain't worth it. No matter how rich or poor, that ain't worth it. Even Alexander learned that the hard way. And I hate to keep going back and back and back to this, but I'm still waiting. I am still waiting for somebody to advance this theme besides me. Alexander the Great, the greatest military mind of his time up there with Julius, right next to Julius Caesar, Alexander the Great could not take and hold Afghanistan. Will somebody please tell me who on the general staff of the United States military, whether it's General James Anus or the Petraeus or whomever, somebody tell me who the Alexander is. Because as noted on the show last night, we've gotten to a point where Hamid Karzai says that his three greatest enemies are the Taliban, the United States, and the international community. And makes no bones about saying it to Eikenberry and the Petraeus themselves to their faces, and then follows it up by saying, and if I had to choose between the three, I'll take the Taliban. And you're going to win that how? And what level of deluded thinking or what passes for thinking in the Pentagon is going to convince you that there's a way to victory? Feh. Fool's errands. Fool's errands. Lines are open here, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333, and we go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
I think I have the most offensive story of the week. It's bad. It's bad, but before I get to that, I want to touch basis on something I see that's happening on Twitter and on the blogs that kind of concerns me, Bob, about this Glenn Greenwald stuff that's going on. I find it very curious, the fact that he's talking about WikiLeaks, and I don't know where you stand, Bob, but I find this very juvenile, the fact of how many people are attacking Glenn Greenwald on his character rather than his reporting on civil liberties and stuff. We all have character flaws in some respect. But one of the things that I find most interesting and most curious is the fact that where this is coming from is by the guy of the name of Thurman Williams, who just popped out of nowhere with a shoddy website that looks like someone made it in 2 seconds, and suddenly he's on an expert on Glenn Greenwald. So my question is, Bob, what's going on with this juvenile, immature hit pieces on people that are really, I would say, credible to the cause?
Well, help me a little bit with a little bit more detail here, please, David.
Well, basically, what's happening, Bob, and I think a lot of people listening, or I should say, a few of them understand. We have a lot of people insulting others on the left and putting a serious charges of traitors, not actually terms like rat fucking and stuff like that, that I find very interesting that we can't have a face-to-face or a personal debate just through Internet snipes. And I find it interesting that this guy, I'm going to say his name again, Thurman Williams, who has one of the most shoddiest websites I've seen in some
time. What argument is Williams making?
Well, he's making the fact that how your progressive donations are being spent, and he's basically doing it through open secrets links. One of the things that he did, which I found very egregious, was the fact that he put one of the links where he said it was. One of the connections was from Paul Ryan, and he had the name wrong, Bob. See, this is what I'm talking about, Bob. This hit journalism, this juvenilism, it needs to stop. This guy, whoever this guy is on this anonymous website called Pillar Strength Online, you know what he should do? He should actually come forward, step forward, and be a fucking man, Bob. That's what he needs to do. And
well,
I find it... see, Bob, here's the thing.
No, you've just hit on something that bothers me a great deal, and
yeah.
That is... And, you know, we use them in the chat room and stuff, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Because it's not permanent. It's not threaded. It's just an ongoing conversation. I don't have a problem with it. But if you ever see me posting on a website, you will see me posting with one exception, and that exception is Democratic Underground, because my handle at Democratic Underground is older than me doing radio. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But everywhere else that you see me posting as something, you will see me posting as Bob Kincaid.
I understand that. But my point is I find this...
I think sniping and snarking goes down dramatically if there is some level of verification of the person behind the keyboard.
I agree with that, but I find this very curious, the fact that as soon as Glenn Greenwald is talking about serious civil liberties and WikiLeaks, and he's about to disclose from his mouth, this is what he said, he's about to disclose that Bradley Manning was being tortured tomorrow on his blog. I find this very interesting. This guy named Thurman Williams sets up a website December 10th at 5:55 p.m., And suddenly people are taking his, like he's a gospel messenger.
Well, look, I mean, there is major weirdness floating around the interweb tubes, David, all around WikiLeaks and Bradley Manning. You know, I mean, look at the charges against Julian Assange. When was the last time Interpol got involved with a case of a guy whose condom broke?
I agree with you, and I think people would be surprised to find that I have problems with Julian Assange based on the fact that this is the problem with the media that we live in, Bob, is the fact that someone can come out and literally we have to take him for his word and his credibility, and instantly in the media he's branded as being our savior. When I don't know Julian Assange's background. I know what I'm told, Bob, just like I know what I was told about Osama bin Laden. And I'm not comparing the two. I'm just saying right now.
Well, if I could suggest a different way of analyzing, David.
Yeah.
What you're describing is a fundamental dysfunction, and I think it's primarily in America, in which we mistake the idea that personality is the same thing as one's work. I applaud Julian Assange for what he has done with WikiLeaks. I don't give a damn about his personality. It could be that he's a guy who helps little old ladies across the street 52 times a day, or he could be a total dick. I'm not concerned with it. Does he get the job done? It's sort of like what Abraham Lincoln said when everybody ran to him during the Civil War and said, Mr. President, you can't put that Grant in charge of the army. He's a drunk. He's a philandering carouser and don't go to church on Sunday and don't love Jeebus.
So that boomerangs back to my original.
But Lincoln's response was, he fights.
So that boomerangs back to my original point. Why is there this this deluded hatred of a man that they don't know, Glenn Greenwald, just because he has a blog and he has a position in the media? What is it that makes this segment of the left so strong against?
Well, there are things that Glenn Greenwald has done. I have read and read approvingly his journalistic work. By the same token, you know, there are rumors going around out there about what an unmitigated ass, personally, Keith Olbermann is. I suppose if I was big enough to be noted anywhere, people would find things to take issue, again, with my personality.
Yeah.
But the question is one of the quality of the work. Glenn Greenwald has done some things to inject him into that personality-driven stuff, and I'm not even going to comment on it. But the fact and he's been involved in things that are a little bit dodgy that open him up to criticism. You know, a guy once told me, he said, you know, if you're going to go and fight the white knight fight,
yeah,
you've got to keep your shield clean. And there are instances where perhaps that hasn't happened. I don't care to go into them. But that's, you know, that's where the attacks are coming from. And make no mistake that some of the attacks, David, are being driven out of wittingly or unwittingly, are being driven by proponents of particular points of view. There's no getting around it.
Oh,
you know, Julian Assange was held in jail on charges that weren't charges. He was bailed out today, but the Swedes said, no, no, don't turn him loose on $300,000 bail.
I just think it's hypocritical to be selective in criticism on certain people on the left, and that's what I see is what's happening, Bob, and that's why I brought this up. Is the fact that I was looking at Twitter and I was like, Jesus Christ, these people can't shut up about Glenn Greenwald and they don't even know him. They should have like a conversation or a dialogue, because no offense to these people, but His track record for reporting on civil liberties is, bar none, one of the best. And you know that, Bob.
I do.
And
I don't criticize.
I know, but here's my point, Bob, and this is a point that I think you will find, you will say it's valid and it's fair. The same character flaws you can point out of someone like Glenn Greenwald, you can go to anyone. You can go to Hunter Thompson. You can go all across the board. But what I'm saying right now is what's happening is it's selective, Bob. It's selective, it's bickering, it's juvenile, and after a while, it just turns a lot of people off. You get what I'm saying?
I do.
This is a problem, Bob. This is, and I'm telling you why this is a problem, because this is what a lot of my friends and a lot of the people I chat with, we have these discussions, and we see this going on. And I'm not going to name any names, but I'm going to put it to you like this. The continuation of just selective and cliques and collectives and pushing on someone and trying to put someone completely in flames and tarnish them and not even take anything what they say for any kind of credibility, or just to basically tar and feather them right in front of the public eye and not even look at their work as in a total spectrum and say, you know what, I think he has something. Because I have to tell you this right now. I think you know this too, Bob. There's a lot of Democratic operatives and a lot of people in the Beltway who despise Glenn Greenwald, and they despise people who write like this. And when you single out someone like this, and when I see attacks like this, Bob, and when I see a website go up on December 10th with no sign of ever being there before, completely just trying to tarnish and feather two people from the left, I find this very curious. Especially in the climate that we're in right now.
Well, first of all, never underestimate that. You mentioned a word a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
And it's a word that was coined by Nixon's operatives. And the word is rat fuck.
Right.
And it was something that they did actively and frequently. It's sometimes translated in the more prissy for-profit media as political dirty tricks. Well, never underestimate the right wing's ability to continue doing them. Because they've never stopped, David.
Oh, I agree with you.
By the same token, there is another psychodynamic at work here, and that is this. Everybody on the Democratic side loved it when all the liberal bloggers had turned their ire and fire on the right wingers and the Republicans of the Bush administration.
Mm.
One of the reasons. One of the reasons, if I may go this far afield, and just work with me, please.
Right.
One of the reasons that I will never have massive major sponsorship for the Horn from any particular corner of the political spectrum is because I've talked about this at length, I don't want anybody out there thinking they own the message. Because you know what? When you pay the money, you get to own the message. I don't care if it's Chiquita Bananas or Progressive Insurance advertising on MSNBC, or if it's some Democrat gatekeeper saying, oh, well, you know, would you like to have the president on your show? Well, once you've done that, David, once you've taken that coin, once you've taken Caesar's coin, you do Caesar's bidding.
Mm.
Because Caesar is Caesar. And so you've got, there's this terrible, terrible dynamic tension out there between people who want access and the lengths to which they will go to have it, and then the turnaround for what is asked of them later.
Mm.
Do you follow?
Yeah, I follow completely,
I you probably go to Osborne Inc. just like I do. I've followed and participated in a thread in the last couple of days that absolutely lit up Matt's site.
And that's the thing what I'm talking about, Bob. I just found a lot of juvenile commentary of people that they don't know from both sides. This is what I'm talking about, Bob. Whenever we get into these issues and these
in that particular thread. The person who posted as Glenn Greenwald could have done themselves a big favor by posting by somehow that would actually verify that it was Glenn Greenwald. Otherwise, it just looked like a troll using his name.
I agree with you. I would like to know if that was Glenn Greenwald. But I guess my main point is, Bob, I think we need to start having, I don't know how we would do this, but I think we need to start having civilized debates and dialogues. And some of these people who are constantly sniping each other, they need to either sit in a room or get on the phone and start talking about, well, what is it you have a problem?
But, and I'm not trying to involve myself in they did it first.
No, I'm not either.
But the fact of the matter is, it's hard to have that dialogue when there are people who approach the issue from a cult perspective.
I agree with you, but I mean, when you have that position and you are ensconced and isolated and you're constantly pushing out that position, don't you develop or don't you endanger and develop your and hinder yourself to develop a cult personality as well? Which is what I'm saying. This is why this needs to be discussed. And when I see people just constantly rolling on someone that they don't know over some specific quotes or comments or gotcha moments, I have to stop for a moment and say, wait a minute. I mean, can't you see that this is childish and immature from anyone just from the outside looking in? It doesn't do any service, is what I'm saying.
Right, and remember, please remember, and I was getting to this a little bit ago, but I sidetracked myself, David.
Yeah.
Please remember that the whole time this is going on, the right wing is giggling fiendishly.
That's right.
Because they are fiends.
That's the point. And and here's the thing that really, really gets to me. And the fact is that somehow people are pointing the finger and saying, these select people are what are bringing our country down. No, it's not. No, it's not, you political scientists. It's the apathy of this country that is bringing this country to a standstill. You know this, Bob, and I know this. Why a lot of people are being deluded to the fact that it's just a few people on the fringe left who get sparse amounts of media time. It's amazing, Bob.
Well, it is. And a question was put to me today out of all of this, David.
Mm-hmm.
A question was put to me today. Do you see yourself as someone who is capable of shaping culture because you have the ability to talk to an audience of Americans? I haven't had a chance. I'm going to respond to this thing at length. But the answer to that question I will gladly provide right here, right now. No. And it has nothing to do with the size of the audience.
Right.
But maybe something to do with the nature of the audience. But most of all, to do with the nature of me. If I came on here 5 nights a week and said, with one hand tied, with half my brain tied behind my back, or talent on loan from God, I would be someone who thought he could influence culture. You know, your truth detector. Horse shit. No, I don't think I can influence culture. All I can do is foster a discussion, that same dialogue that you're talking about.
Right, right.
Again, because I also understand what would you say, the métier of being liberal, so-called liberal in America. I know that giving marching orders isn't worth a damn to liberals. I've said it before, I'll say it again. Some people describe it as trying to get liberals going in one direction as trying to herd cats across a parking lot. And I've said before, that's bullshit. Because you can set down an open can of Little Friskies and get most of the cats to come to the can of Little Friskies, and you just keep moving the can. But
right.
The fact of the matter is, in dealing with liberal land, we're not herding cats across a damn parking lot, David. We're wrangling fucking butterflies, okay?
You got that right. And,
sorry about the F word. That one just came out.
Yeah, I apologize for me using the F word as well. But, see, the whole thing about why I wanted to bring this up was the fact that it's just something that I personally, and I think a lot of the people who are just getting into this, who are just getting into politics or just getting into these issues, need to understand that there's something on, and I hate the fact that some people who will just say some comments on a Twitter or a blog are instantly labeled a teabagger or a firebagger or any of these terms that really just separate.
To the extent that they are instantly labeled as such, I agree. But to the extent that certain kinds of behavior lead one to the conclusion that that's what one is, that's different. Now, when you haul out Obama bot or firebagger, then the conversation probably ends before it starts.
Right.
And as such, that is problematic. I should probably do a better job of reserving my fire for the right wing. But you know, sometimes in the case of like 83 senators who voted in favor of extending themselves a tax cut, you know, that's 83 senators. That's Republicans and Democrats alike. You know, screw them, because I know that they know that I know where they stand and what they're voting for. Because they're millionaires. They gave themselves a tax cut. In any sort of rational world, that vote could never have been taken because it would have been a conflict of interest. But there are no such rules for the Senate of the United States. So, yeah, I probably get out of my own track a little bit here and there.
Oh, I think we all do in that respect. But I guess my main issue with all of this is the fact that we write off so many other segments of the left.
Well, the other side of it, you mentioned a moment ago, David.
Yeah.
That you mentioned new people coming into politics.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that I would suggest would be a real fix for the stuff that comes out of that is that new people coming into politics quit acting like it's another goddamned episode of Jersey freaking Shore and everybody's snooky and the situation. Because, you see, especially for a younger crowd, that's what informs them. I walked into the living room and my daughter was watching the Jersey Shore and I just, turn it off.
Yeah, that is a problem.
Because that is a model. Whether we like it or not, that is the model for discussion and dialogue in this country. You know, I far prefer the idea of a couple of Frenchmen with some Guitton cigarettes over several glasses of wine at a cafe on the left bank arguing at the top of their freaking lungs.
Mm-hmm.
But doing so with some working understanding of what they're arguing about. And as long as politics is taken as some sort of years-long damnable reality show that every blessed for-profit media network has done everything in their power to create, then you know, it's screwed. And meanwhile, like I said, the right wing is giggling. At this point, they're on their backs. At this point, they can't get their breath. They may have just peed themselves. The tears are flowing out of their little old beady, ratty eyes. They're laughing so godforsaken hard.
You know, they're becoming experts, virtuosos, if I might say, at unraveling movements.
That's what agent provocateurs do. And don't you think for a minute that if there were that many millions upon millions of dollars of Citizens United money that flowed into an election and completely turned it toxic, glow-in-the-dark green, don't think that that money doesn't continue to flow to do exactly the kind of stuff that you, David, are describing now.
Yeah, and I mean, look at some of the people that they're putting out right now. Look what happened with Guy Allen West today.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. Yeah, he wants to prosecute the New York Times.
Yeah, he wants.
But that meme is catching on.
All right, you know that's the most tragic thing about it is the fact that a guy like this has credibility. And the fact that he wants to he wants to put a timeout on penalize all media that takes the coverage with WikiLeaks in a positive manner. I mean, more and more. It looks like we're headed back to the days of the Kremlin.
Well, we're dealing with real live information management. You know, Jesus criminy, when Julian Assange is held in the country that invented habeas corpus without charges, and the Swedes can stop him from being released on bail on charges that weren't really charges in the first place. You know, Jesus Christ, what kind of a charge is surprise sex? I mean, is that when Justin Timberlake hands you the dick in the box? I mean, you get my meaning.
There are
welcome to Onionville, David. There are layers within layers within layers within layers.
I'm going to have to call in with this other story, but I did want to say one last thing. I'm still waiting for that address, Bob.
Yeah, I know. And
I had to say that. But
No. I know you are, and you know what?
We're actually
warm enough to begin moving around a little bit more, so there's a little greater likelihood of that now. It's cold here.
And I think we're going to go see Tron this weekend, so get ready, Bob.
Well, I can't go Saturday. Can we go Sunday?
You know what?
I want to go on a Jeff Bridges binge. I want to see Tron, and I saw that.
Have you seen his website, by the way? For people who haven't been.
It's the most beautiful website on earth.
It's an amazing website. For people who haven't been, you got to go.
I want to go on a Jeff Bridges binge. I want to see Tron, and I just saw the trailer for the new True Grit.
Oh yes, Tron and True Grit. Those are two movies, and I want to go see. I don't know if I actually want to drive out there, but I want to go see Client Number 9.
Yeah, that's got potential.
Yeah. But anyways, Bob, it's always an interesting, enlightening conversation. And
we've had some dandies lately, David, and I thank you very much.
People, if you're waiting, I'm off the phone now. You're next.
Talk to you later, David.
Yeah, bye.
Bye now. Pop culture correspondent David, and you know what? I'm glad that David pays attention to this kind of Tweety, Facebooky stuff. Because I'd get on and I'd do my little updates, and that's pretty much all I do. But you know, be aware. Please be aware. When you see this snarking and sniping and infighting, please be aware that some of it is manufactured. Stuff that I've said in comment postings, I said sincerely because they were based on personal observation. And you know what? I've participated in flame wars in the past. Screw it. I don't have any patience or time for it anymore. Because it's like, I don't know. It's like winning at Rock'em Sock'em Robots. It's still Rock'em Sock'em Robots. Oh boy, you won an argument on the internet. Good for you. Don't forget to wear your house helmet. You know, Jesus. Let's go back to the phones. Lines open, by the way, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. And here we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Oh, my God, I wasn't going to call. I just couldn't resist. Listen, I was just sort of tripping on, okay, you heard about Holbrook's last words, right?
Yeah, and now it's a joke?
No, that's what I'm saying. This is a serious man who had a hand in writing the Pentagon Papers, so he knows how governments will fabricate wars. You know what I'm saying? So you're telling me he had a torn aorta about to go into an operation for 21 hours, knowing that his life is on the line and perhaps will be over, which, sad to say, it was, is joking about something like that? You know what? I am finding the Obama administration just really?
That is, well, that's a degree of gallows humor that even I, a fond aficionado of gallows humor, find to be just a little bit too far to believe.
I don't believe it. I just think that, you know, they are so up in the shit with this war that, have you been noticing what's going on over there? It's really hard to find out, but it's a horror. I mean, apparently, when that Petraeus took over, that fool just said, oh, we just gonna carpet bomb. They have tripled the amount of air power they've been using on that poor country, okay? And, you know, it's just death all around. I mean, it's so out of control in Afghanistan, and to hear the Obama administration, you know, trying to make light of this really important figure in this whole mess expiring all of a sudden, it's just too much. I'm not buying that at all. I'm really disturbed because, you know, I mean, I'm not, Holbrook had whatever, but he was, you know, a powerful diplomat, and anyone who studied any international relations, you're well familiar with him. So I don't buy it. Just just in my own reading of the man. I don't know. That's bugging me.
What was the? I'm trying to find it here in all my little tabs. What was the exact quote?
Let's see. I'm trying to find it exactly because I don't want to miss.
Right. Believe me, I understand. I kind of live there.
I can't really find. I don't know why I can't find it now. Anyway, it was something to the effect of, "We need to stop. We have to stop this war in Afghanistan." That's basically the extent of it.
Yeah, you've got to stop this war in Afghanistan.
Right. And so,
here's the full exchange. This is apparently according to State Department spokesman P.J. Crowley, saying that when they were rolling Holbrook into surgery, he said, at one point the medical team said, "You've got to relax." And Richard said, "I can't relax. I'm worried about Afghanistan and Pakistan." And then there was some back and forth. And the medical team said, "Tell you what, we'll try to fix this challenge while you're undergoing surgery." And then Holbrook said, "Yeah, see if you can take care of that, including ending the war."
And so we're supposed to look at that as, okay, well, I'm not buying it. I'm thinking of, remember William Casey? Remember that fool?
That's the first thing I thought of, Sandra.
Okay, you know where my mind's at, because unfortunately, you know, I follow this stuff, and so I'm thinking, oh, wait a minute. You know, when these central figures in these wars and these sort of international intrigues, when they start dropping off, you know, you got to, like, check it. I can't take it as face value. I'm not saying anything.
Well, no, I mean, there's all kinds of history around this stuff. There's that that meeting that a young John Kennedy had with Douglas MacArthur in his suite in New York as MacArthur was getting ready to check out.
Mm.
And what were the words that MacArthur said to Kennedy? "Son, don't get into a ground war in Asia." Now, this is MacArthur. This is MacArthur who wanted to nuke and invade China.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by the same token, you know, Holbrook's got a little blood on his hands.
Well, yeah, I know.
But maybe when the bat wings start fluttering, shit does change.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, some of his dealings in Pakistan and the whole Dayton Accords, I mean, listen, we could talk for hours of just about that little,
Yeah.
I still have image of Milosevic speaking in Ohio, talking about this, that, or another. Remember that?
No, very well.
Anyway.
I think I was sober that day.
Well, it was just, yeah, it's just too much. But at any rate, I'm more concerned with the sort of administration. This is an administration that's not looking like anything's going to change with these permanent wars we have. That's what I'm talking about, basically. I just think it makes me despair, because I'm like, damn, you know? You know, back to the whole into the streets, I mean, the peace movement most definitely needs to rev up big time, because Obama's not making any plans to do anything but to continue this, and don't we have a deficit?
Yeah, we do. And, you know, it's funny you would mention that. No, it's not funny. That's how these conversations work, Sandra. You mentioned that, and you know what? I don't know. Maybe I'm just getting really, really pissy. But I'm sick of hearing about the damn deficit.
Well,
I'm tired. You know, first it was Republicans. Deficit, 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 deficit. And now all of a sudden the Democrats have caught the deficit bug. Those of them that don't like, as I don't like, as you don't like, the extension of the tax cuts for the rich. And the main reason for doing it is the deficit. You know, damn, can we not frame anything for ourselves, Sandra? And that's not a criticism of you, I hope you understand.
Oh, no, I'm saying the deficit, you know, pejoratively speaking, because I'm sick of it and how it's being used. It's a bit of a joke. It's like weapons of mass destruction at this point, considering what the behavior is. Because I don't know how they can come on with a straight face talking about deficits when they're more than happy to extend these completely useless tax cuts.
And see, that's why I had that moment about, you know, Obama. you know, okay, this thing's going to pass. It's going to pass. It gets passed. I yearn. I freaking yearn. And it's kind of heartbreaking, Sandra, because I know it ain't going to happen. No pony at Christmas, and this ain't going to happen either, because I yearn for Barack Obama to walk out, you know, behind the gold curtain hallway behind him, all that BS, and say, this bill has passed, and I have signed it into law, and I will whip the ass of the first person who says the word deficit from the Republican side of the aisle. Good day.
Oh, I know, but see, just but this thing that I'm tripping on is that, wait a minute, weren't we told that if X is done, then all of a sudden, don't ask, don't tell, the START treaty, blah, blah, blah?
It was all dominoes.
Funny how that's not happening.
No, Ben.
Are you surprised? You know what I'm saying?
No, Ben, you know, and for Ben Nelson to be the point man on that?
Well, yeah, no, that's what was killing me. I'm like, good Lord, you know, and the thing is, what's really just despairing is that this is exactly what I gathered would happen, that they would agree to anything and everything and couldn't even get things like the START treaty, which, by the way, folks, this is so necessary. Oh, my God. I'm looking at that and horrified that this is even an issue. This is.
Well, it's like John Kyle out there, Sandra, saying, well, you know, I'm afraid that it ties America's hands too tightly in terms of our future missile defenses.
It's not 1985, Bob. You see what I'm saying? I'm like, what planet? Do we really want the Russians, the way they're split up, to begin another arms race? What planet is this? And, it, you know, it's just...
And, you know, I have said in the past and been corrected, Sandra, that the Russians don't have the most exquisitely tuned senses of humor. But they do. Because they're watching us break ourselves on the rack of Afghanistan, just like the Soviet Union did. And now they've got the opportunity to gin up an arms race that we really, honest to Jesus, can't afford. You think maybe they'd like to see us fall apart like the Soviet Union did, and then everybody just starts from zero in India?
Listen, I mean, I told you the whole sort of, hegemonic stability theory, you know, where you need a hegemon to control the type of system we have in the world internationally right now. So if the decline of the U.S., if it's not going to resemble the decline of the British Empire, we're into some really problematic times, Bob. Trust and believe that.
And see, it may not resemble that. And you...
it ain't. Yeah.
And I'm guilty of going for the ancient Rome analogy and reaching into that bag of tricks way too often. It may not even look like that.
Well, no, because the thing about the brilliance of the decline of Britain was that they timed it in a way that, yeah, it cost them their empire and all their money, but they didn't implode because the U.S. assumed the role. But there ain't nothing assuming the U.S.'s role right now. And we can't afford the great power dynamics that existed, you know, at the turn of the century or the turn of the last century, which is what the world is going to be laid out like.
And the thing is, Sandra, it sets up an awfully damn scary sort of the center cannot hold scenario.
Well, really
because there's nobody in place to step in as that hegemon if we crash.
Well, no, and don't get me wrong. I'm not advocating the whole hegemonic thing. I'm just pointing out what is, because I tend to fall more on the realist side of international relations than the sort of multilateralism bullshit, because I think at the end of the day, states are into self-preservation, and they cooperate in order to preserve their interests, not this kind of it's all connected. So much so that you have to cooperate? No, no, no. That's some BS. To me, that's just my sort of thoughts about how the international arena is. I'm much more Hobbesian, you know?
Well, I think that's an appropriate self-designation.
But anyway, and to tie it back to the start, it's just sort of not cool because, unfortunately, you know, Americans aren't really keyed into foreign policy and international relations, so they may not, you know, you're not going to get the sense of the importance of it, but it's really important, okay? God damn.
And, you know, you got an amen from Kate out in Montana. She says, Holbrooke's last words, you know, why are they objectionable? And, you know, they're not. It's the idea that the Obama administration is spinning it as some sort of a joke.
Yes, bizarre. I mean,
and she said, I thought of Casey, too. This was just too convenient. Somebody up there wanted him gone.
Who knows? I mean, you know, he was acting up a bit, I guess. But, listen, I'll let you go. But the Corker thing is interesting. I think I sent that to you about how they're now forming blocks to get ready to, you know, challenge President Week on the debt ceiling. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's coming up. It's just like, how bad of a trap has Obama allowed himself to be put in where he has to say, we're going to raise your taxes in 2 years? What a complete idiot, okay?
You know, there's something in me that rebels against that, Sandra, but I don't have a rational basis upon which to do so. Because I mean, one of the arguments that Matt Osborne has been making is that, you know, Obama is not Congress, and a hell of a lot of this, blame that is deservedly out there to be heaped deserves to fall on Congress. And I got no problem with that argument. I'll agree with it. But somewhere along the way, Barack Obama is in charge of Barack Obama's future campaign, not Harry Reid, not Nancy Pelosi, not Alan Grayson, not anybody. Barack Obama. And he's in a corner, and the paint in front of him is sopping wet for the next 3 years.
Well, no, and the Congress isn't the one going on TV talking about, I'll fight the tax extension. He said that. I'm not making that up, remember?
Yeah, I know. Is somebody telling him something that we don't know?
Well, I don't know. I'm just sort of...
You know, is somebody saying, listen, the crash in the next year is going to come hard, and we're going to make the Republicans eat it? Because even a strategy like that, while it would have been sound in another era, is utterly meaningless in 2010 in Fox America.
Well, no, but it's really disturbing because he'll go on the air talking about, yes, I realize that the tax increases, you know, on the rich won't create one job. Well, then why, MF-er, are you doing it?
And, you know, he's articulated that reason, I guess, well enough, saying, you know, I want the unemployment.
Oh, please. There's no Congress in this day and age, if they want to get reelected, would completely abandon the UI program. I'm wrong, but I don't believe it. Because they got to get elected, too.
But, see, the teabaggers have scared people with their manufactured reality, Sandra, into thinking that, you know, they've got the gun, they're holding it, you know, he'll do it. He really will. He's crazy. He'll shoot.
Well, I mean, I know what you're saying. I suppose, especially in lieu of these people who want to make it alone. Have you heard that?
Oh, Jim DeMint.
No, but they're basically advocating straight up indentured servitude.
Sure they are. And the other thing, that you know, this is another one that we put under the heading of they want it all. Because there is, you know, we're going to have 13 months of unemployment compensation. Well, by golly, if we can turn it into a loan, then that means that the bankers get to wet their beaks.
And people are just sort of seriously serfs and slaves. Because the reality is that I thought unemployment insurance was insurance. Everyone pays into it. You may work for 40 years and never use it, but you still contribute. So if your ass is thrown out of work for 4 years, well, goddamn it, you're entitled to get covered for that length of time if the economy is stagnant, like 1932. Okay?
Right, and you know how is 10 years of work not enough to cover you for 4 years?
Especially when you're getting $300 a week. I mean, no, the premise. And this gets back to, you know, how ignorant the populace can be, that they don't understand. They're quite saying, yep, these people need not get any help so they can go out and get a job, you know, $3 an hour a year. In the meanwhile, all wages are crashing around them. And one day they're going to wake up and they can only work for $1 an hour. Then what?
Nobody going to be shopping at Walmart no more, I don't think.
Oh, gee, no, but it's just sort of, it's not that.
Hell, that's not, you know, they won't have the money to shop at Goodwill.
But it's not rocket science, and it's what is going on, because the trend is to make us equal to Bangladesh. Now, obviously, it's not going to happen overnight, but, I mean, that is the trend.
Sure it is. And And once again, Sandra, it's another case of Republicans trotting out the same old tired crap and branding it as something new. You know, just like Obama bought into the, the federal payroll freeze that Paul Ryan had been bogarting off of 50 years of Republican intransigence. Well, by the same token, you know, Jim DeMented's It's a Loan thing? Well, damn. I'm in West Virginia, Sandra. I've still got coal company script in a little jewelry box somewhere. Because that's how that whole that system of serfdom worked. Everything was a loan. You couldn't make your paycheck stretch till the next paycheck, so you went to the company store with company script, and you went in debt. And you stayed in debt to the company store for the rest of your life. You know, that's why that whole Tennessee Ernie Ford thing about I owe my soul to the company store, that's not just a catchy line from a country tune. That's the reality that my people lived.
No, but it's just the whole idea that they keep talking about transforming unemployment insurance into something other than what it is now because it's going on for too long for their liking. Well, create jobs then. You see what I'm saying? There's a solution to this. If you have people with jobs will start paying taxes again, no more deficit. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If you create a works program, which the corporations don't want, that's the dirty secret here. They do not want the government creating jobs for people because they cannot keep their wages dirt cheap. This is what's going on in this country. So all this yammering by liberals, why don't Obama do a jobs works? He ain't. Okay?
Yeah, because he ain't.
Because he's meeting them CEOs.
Yeah, why doesn't Obama have an, this goes back to other discussions we've had again. Why doesn't the Obama administration have an industrial manufacturing policy? Because he ain't. Because he's meeting with the bankers.
Exactly. Just watch with your damn eyes, folks, what's going on. That's what I'm doing. And when I see some a-hole meeting with CEOs, I don't see federal work programs. I see nothing.
And, kind of get used to it?
Well, yeah.
Because nothing... a long time ago, and this applies to Republicans, but we may be staring it in the face again. My grandmother told me this. She was born in 1894. She was a full-on, 30s adult in the Depression trying to feed children. She said, the Republicans promised us 3 meals a day. And they delivered. Oatmeal, miss a meal, and skip a meal.
Oh, shut up! I'm using that. That's incredible.
And it's on the way. It's on the way back on the fast track, Sandra.
Well, no, but there's so many ugly things going on. I don't know if I told you this, but have you heard about the driving across country in your RV, working at Amazon for $10 an hour? Hell,
no.
Oh yes. People are leaving their homes, whatever they're doing, getting their RVs, and they have these camps all over the place.
Yeah, Good Sam clubs and stuff.
Where you can plug in your trailer and you can go work for $10 an hour completing orders for the Christmas rush for Amazon. Okay,
Well, how far different from that is the, the Rick Scott campaign in Florida? Or was it Rubio that was paying people in gift cards?
Well, yeah, I'm just saying it's just sort of, because I know that we go on in our conversations about, economics, but I've, decided that is the key. I'm not going to – political freedom means nothing if we're subjected to this economic dictatorship. And until people understand our economic system in any kind of way that they can, we're real screwed, Because that's the key.
I think you've nailed it down. That's the line of the night. Political freedom don't mean nothing when you're under economic tyranny.
It's just too much. But anyway, I don't have nothing funny to say. I was just responding because David's call was like, that was great. The whole attack on Greenwald? What in the world? That is just too weird.
It's definitely out there. A lot of it has to do with the... what appears to be the very dodgy pact that he formed with Jane Hampshire.
Well, you seem to have a real thing. What is the deal with you and Jane Hampshire? What's her problem?
There's no thing, but I mean, you know, what was it? I forget what year it was when she posted the picture of Joe Lieberman in blackface.
Oh, shit. She went like that?
Yeah.
Oh, so I guess she would be one of the people that the black diarist at Daily Kos would be having issues with?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, so what? He formed some sort of what? They have some kind of...
They've got a pack called Accountability Now Pack.
Oh, and do they provide ads for...
Well, no. And then she's got her ad business, too.
Oh.
Common Sense Media. And at the same time that she was taking money, she owns Common Sense Media, and at the same time she was taking money from BP, she was criticizing the Sierra Club for taking money from BP.
Shut up. Really?
Yeah. And then they paid a right-wing outfit affiliated with Ron Paul some $15,000 to do a money bomb to raise $200,000 or so for this thing called Accountability Pack, Accountability Now Pack. And Accountability Now Pack has a mission statement saying that they're going to fund and encourage the good progressive liberal challengers in primaries.
And then Greenwald is involved with this one?
Yep, he's partners with her in it.
Oh, right, because I know she's making...
They brought in their one expense sheet that's out there. They brought in $200,000+.
Oh, okay, so, yeah. So they
I think they funded one candidate with $5,000, and the rest has been, well, it's apparently a slush fund.
Oh, no medical bill spending, are there? Oh, you're not laughing.
No, you get the idea. So that, you know, that was the door that Greenwald opened on himself. I respect the man's journalistic credentials and the work that he does on that front. And I don't like these wars of personality. I've met Jane one time, and I formed a very low opinion of her off of that first impression. But, you know, first impressions are first impressions.
Yeah, first impressions, they do what they do.
When you walk up and introduce yourself to someone in a fairly not prestigious, but you know, it was a respectable setting. You walk up and introduce yourself to somebody and they treat you like you just showed up with shit on your shoes. You know, it's not like, you know, do you know who I am? Yeah. You know, I mean, you know, Sandra, I don't do that shit. But it was, yeah, I mean, what's that smell? You know.
Right. Or, oh, God, you know.
And, you know, if we want any verification, Guy James was there. He saw it go down.
Yeah, well, that kind of stuff is a direct turnoff to me, too. I agree. I think how people treat other people, especially people they don't know, it tells me everything because you don't know who the hell you're treating badly, right?
Theoretically. Okay. And I just generally speaking, unless it's like the asshole sitting in the restaurant two Saturdays ago,
Ralph Reed,
and laughing about his picture of the buck that his buddy shot, and it turns out to be a picture of Snoop Dogg.
Okay.
You know, I generally will treat people as I want to be treated. That shit they hand to you in the basement of the Baptist church by the little old blue-haired ladies has a way of sticking.
Listen, I'm sorry you mentioned that because I'm still trying to recover. I was looking at some TV show that the girls were watching just to check on them, and all of a sudden Snoop Dogg popped up in their cartoon. I said, oh, give me the remote and cut. I don't want that porn purveyor Lee Iacocca commercial-making freak in my niece's cartoon.
World. Well, then you understand the reaction I had when I caught Doodle, who is, you know, laying there on the couch recovering from surgery. Okay, I'm sympathetic. But when I walked in there and she's like, no, I said, what the hell is this?
Oh, what, the Jersey Shore?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, see, that's another one, the remote and cut. There's no way. I mean, the nieces aren't old enough, but, you know, they'd be watching some. I'm trying to recover from the, what's his name, Justin, some of these these little boys that they like, these boy singers. I'm still trying to recover from that.
Believe me. You know, and Justin Bieber. You know, there was something they were reading online the other day, and Doodle was laughing her stitches loose. She said it was apparently a cartoon or something, and the mother says, "Are you in there? Are you in there watching porn?" "Yes, mother." "Oh, good. Okay, that's all right. I thought you were watching Justin Bieber."
Exactly. Especially when I turn the page and he's talking about he likes girls. I'm like,
No. Justin Bieber. It's a little known secret, Sandra, that shortly before his voice completely changed, Jimmy Osmond was put into cryogenic suspension next to Walt Disney's head.
And that's him.
And he's been thawed out, and he's Justin Bieber.
Oh my God. Well, no. Anyway, I mean, what the sort of pop culture for the tweenies and below is really mind numbing in itself, except whatever that Montana chick is now.
Oh, hooting on the bong?
Smoking bong, so she's lost.
Yeah, but the thing is, they're such pathetic little weenies, if I may say that, because she was, first of all, her girlfriend, yeah, right, yeah, GFF, BFF, whatever, cell phone taped her doing three hits of salvia off a bong. Not even pot, for Christ's sakes. And then it couldn't get to TMZ fast enough. I'm so ashamed of myself for knowing this shit, Sandra.
You got young people around you. That's what time it is. I'm not proud of it, but every time I turn my head, I'm hearing about these really frightening teen icons.
Oh, and you know, I just busted out. You know, it was out of my mouth. You know, I opened the mouth, the bats flew out. I just turned and looked at Doodle because Snooki was on the screen. And I said, "Listen, you know," I said, "honey, you know I watch a lot of news, right?" She, "Oh yeah, Daddy, that's your job." I said, "You know what? One of the news stories I keep looking for is no, honey, what's that? No, Daddy, what's that?" I said, "I've got an RSS feed set up for when the news story hits that Snooki's been run over by a freaking bus and squashed flat and is deader than a stump." And she said, "Oh, Daddy, that's mean."
Well, no, the thing with Snoop Dogg, though, is that I'm, like, looking at my friend. I'm saying, "Listen, this fool used to sing about eating pussy with Dr. Dre. So now he's here? You see what I'm saying? I'm sorry. I can't lose it. I don't understand. But only in America, right?"
Well, you know, I'm not sure who's creepier, Snoop Dogg or the dude on Gabba Gabba Hey. You know, with the orange hair.
Oh, shit.
It
really is a horror show out there, I have to say.
You know, I never thought I would see the day when I looked back fondly at Tinky Winky and Barney the Daggum Dinosaur.
Exactly. No, you're right. That is so benign when you think about it.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was disturbing on some sort of a, but it was compared to this, it was benign.
Well, the stuff that's going on now is definitely has a real sort of horror element to it. To me, it scares me. I'm forever running out the room.
Well, and speaking of horror, you know, I can't swing a stick in this house without hitting some damn vampire book.
Oh, listen, don't get me started. Thankfully, the girls are too young for that madness. That shit is well weird for me. I'm not into it. That, was it full moon or blue moon? Moon, listen.
Moon over Mormons.
God damn it.
Because the thing, that whole Twilight series is nothing but a sort of weird, tricked out, the vampired up, angst ridden piece of Mormon propaganda.
Right? Exactly. No. But so what? That's all over your house? Damn, I feel for you because that stuff is way.
And again, I look back on Harry Potter and I had it made.
No, I was talking to the twins. I said, "You guys are all into the Harry Potter." "Oh no, that stuff is real scary." In the meanwhile, I'm looking at what they're watching. I'm thinking, "Hello?"
You know, I remember years ago when we all went out for, you know, like once a year, the whole family will go to a movie because we're kind of like Mayella Yule saving up nickels to send the kids off for ice cream. It takes a lot of saving to send this tribe to the movies. Last year it was Avatar.
Okay.
And a few years before that, it was the remake of King Kong.
Mm.
And bless her heart, Agnes was so tired that she fell asleep in the movie. And she only woke up when the Tyrannosaurus Rex was screaming in her face. And you know, all you can hear is Tyrannosaurus Rex screaming. And the audience is dead still. And all of a sudden you hear Agnes's lovely voice holler, "What the f-?" You know. Because she woke up with a Tyrannosaur in her face.
Oh, no. I guess that reminds me, I have to line up because the girls are off for 2 weeks. You know, we have the holiday thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to line up some movies for them. So, yeah, that reminds me.
Oh, good luck. I said with David, my only hopes are seeing Tron and True Grit.
Oh, God. Yeah, anyway. They're pretty simple, but still, I have to find something that I can bear, too, though. I know that's selfish, but you know how it is.
Listen, you know, if you're halfway through The Land Before Time Part 16 and you're ready to open a vein, no, you got to be able to tolerate it, too.
Well, it's funny because their grandfather, you know, he don't give a... And so he had them watching Jurassic Park. I'm like, you know, because that's pretty scary. But, you know, you don't tell them nothing, so...
No, oh, no. No, no.
Anyway, listen, I know we ain't drifted. I gotta let go.
No, but that was fun. Thank you, Sandra.
Okay, bye.
God. I know we drifted. No. It's like Danny said in his email. I wasn't drifting. I was just neighbors over a cup of coffee over by the back fence. I got a feeling her back fence didn't freeze near as much as my back fence is freezing. We'll use the one in Sacramento. Oh, Jesus. How do you finish after that? Well, I'll tell you how you finish after that. You finish with a sports story. No, quick. Don't click away. We started this program talking about General James Amos, Commandant of the Marine Corps. Well, apparently he hasn't met, but he needs to meet FIFA president, you know, the worldwide sanctioning body for football, otherwise known to ignorant Americans as soccer. Why? I don't know. FIFA president is Sepp Blatter. And he had a press conference today to talk about the World Cup. And as you know, the World Cup in 2016 will be in Qatar, a notoriously homophobic, by definition of being a Muslim country. There's a lot of homophobia in Muslim countries, if you didn't know. I think you did. But he was asked, since it is such a repulsively homophobic place, Sepp Blatter was asked what he expects gay soccer fans to do who want to come to the World Cup games in Qatar. Or Qatar, or whatever. This is, at least in theory, what he had to say. Maybe. Kinda. Sorta. Oh. No, I don't want your stupid advertisement. It's, among other things, there's a basketball star named John Amici who is gay. And this occasioned no small amount of criticism coming from him. Let's see what CNN has for us.
I would say then that they should refrain from any sexual activities.
Oh, that's fun. No, let's do that again.
And I would say then that they should refrain from any sexual activities. No, but definitely, lady, we are living in a world of freedom. And I'm sure that when the World Cup will be in Qatar, and this will be in 2022, and you see that in the Middle East, the opening of this culture, it's an other culture because it's another religion, but in football, we have no boundaries. we open everything to everybody, and I think there shall not be any discrimination against any human beings.
Think again, Sepp. This, you know, you're not gonna overcome 1,400 years of homophobic bigotry in six, and even the economic pressures that you bring to bear aren't going to overcome it. But once again, it's the same damn slur that General Amos used. I'm worried about the Marines because I'm afraid the gay Marines' gayness would cause a distraction if. You know, I would suggest that they not be quite so gay. It leaves the gay at home if you're coming to the World Cup in 2016. Like I said, this pissed off John Amici. He's a basketball star. He also happens to be gay. And he was the first NBA basketball player to come out, but he was only able to do so after he retired in 2007. He referred to Mr. Sepp Blatter as being archaic and displaying Neanderthal ignorance. I think he was being a bit rough on the Neanderthals there personally. But he said this. The statements in the position adopted by Sepp Blatter and FIFA regarding LGBT fans who would pay the enormous ticket and travel prices to attend the World Cup in 2022, my bad, 2022, should have been wholly unacceptable a decade ago. Instead, with little more than an afterthought, FIFA has endorsed the marginalization of LGBT people around the world. If sport cannot serve to change society, even temporarily during the duration of an event like the World Cup, then it is little more than grown men chasing a ball, and we should treat it as such. Because, as our good friend John noted to me in an email, the fact of the matter is, sport is a common metaphor throughout the world for life itself. And when that life is a life that is put forward in an argument that one should simply hide one's basic human nature in order to go to a bigoted country, then the problem does not lie with the sexuality of any given attendee of sport. The problem lies with that sanctioning body that put the games in that homophobic, bigoted country. Unless you think me inconsistent, I will say the same thing about the football national championship, the NCAA mythical national championship coming up in Glendale, Arizona, in January of the coming year. The NCAA is giving the imprimatur of sanction to Arizona for its legalized bigotry via SB 1070 and the other things that Russell Pierce tell us is still to come. It should have been moved. And I am the only person. Maybe I'm the only. No, I'm not the only liberal college football fan. But I'm the only one who is making any mention of this. And it's not going anywhere. The NCAA should at least be forced, compelled. And the Football Bowl Championship Series should be compelled to address the fact that they are holding their national championship in a state that sanctions bigotry against people who would otherwise like to attend their universities. Thank you, Kate. She says, that's it. That does it. Earthquake coming right up. Send it out, Kate. Get a man on it, would you? So that's the program. Thanks to everybody who made it happen. Thanks to those of you who have gotten us up over the hump and past the one-week goal for fundraising for the program. I'm going to cut the credits short this evening so that I don't step on Rick Smith's time. He's on his way. The Rick Smith Show live from behind the Scrapple Curtain in Pennsylvania. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.